It's the news, according to me. Good morning. It is Thursday morning, September 4th, 9:06 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. A little bit later than I thought it was going to be. At this point, I had some preparations to do. Plus, I had to make some sweet tea this morning. So it's not fully vetted yet. Vetted is not the right word. It's not fully fully matured yet. By the way, it's 2025. Just in case you find this in the future, some thousand years from now, somebody finds this, wants to know what year it was done in. Well, now you know. And I also have a cup with me. My cup is a cup of chai tea, chai latte. Just a little bit of Pacific chai. Island chai in there to tell you. I've got my big train chai plus the little bit of Pacific Island chai, which has a little bit of spice. Now, it's not really spicy. I wouldn't call it spicy. It's just a little more of a spice to it. The backup cup, of course, is my homemade sweet peach tea. The peaches haven't permeated the flavor yet very well. They're frozen. That's the one thing about, if you have fresh peaches you put in there that aren't frozen, it's kind of this dichotomy. It's a dichotomy? Dilemma? I don't know what it is. It's one of those things. And it actually has a, the fresh peaches add the flavor quicker. However, the frozen peaches, sorry, I had to move my microphone around. The frozen peaches seem to have a longer effect. I don't know why that is. They seem to last longer. First of all, in the tea, but it takes them a little bit longer to permeate through the tea itself. And so it's typically I like to make it at night and put the peaches in there, and then by morning it's usually pretty good. Get that flavor coming through. But the frozen peaches, of course, haven't released their flavor yet. However, the fresh peaches don't last as long. That's kind of weird, but yeah, there you go. There's something about freezing the peaches. I think that kind of crystallizes some of the flavoring. It actually helps to release that flavor seems to release better. I don't understand it, but it's kind of the way it works. Anyway, onward and upward. We have I want to get on this whole thing about the left and how just. If you have hatred in your heart for something, Jesus is very clear. Don't be angry, but don't let the sun go down in your anger. Don't be an angry person. Don't be a bitter, angry person. It's being angry is not a sin necessarily. I believe. Messiah himself was pretty angry when he saw the. I would imagine he noticed it before, this whole thing about the money changers and the people who were selling things in the temple, at the temple, I should say. I think even when he was younger, I'm sure growing up, seeing what he was seeing, he knew there was a time coming when he was going to have to act and overturn those tables and drive the money changers out. Now, with a whip, by the way. There was no big uproar about this, by the way. They didn't try to stone him for that. They didn't try to crucify him or persecute him for that. They for some reason, they were like, oh. Okay. Probably because they knew it was wrong to begin with. You know, you don't set up shop in a place like that without permission. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole here for a minute. These money changers and vendors you don't just set up shop at the temple anywhere around that area. This, trust me, the rabbis would have something to do with it. The priests would have something to do with it. And my guess is they were taking a cut. The corruption went further than just there at the table that was turned over. Something happened there that day, and I don't, you know, everything that he did was in perfect timing with all of the feasts and all of the foretelling of him coming. Everything was done to the minute to fulfill the spring feasts. This is where I think the Western church loses so much, because we do not study the feasts. We don't even look at them. We don't look at anything to do with Hebrew culture, even though our entire religion comes from the Judaic roots of our faith. Now, it's my opinion, I'm not going to go too far down this, it's my opinion that the Western church, primarily the Roman Catholic Church, sought to basically reinvent the wheel and change so many of the things that were... folks, I'm going to say this. I don't mean to upset any of my Catholic friends. Roman Catholic friends. But there are issues with the Roman Catholic Church and its history. There is, and has been, and still is, and probably will be, an underlying current of anti-Semitism within the Catholic Church. And it's there. It's not always very clear or easy to see. People have been talking about Candace Owens, some of the things that have happened there with her, and why she's now all of a sudden so kind of gone kind of woke on some issues, especially with regard to Israel and some of those kinds of things. Now, I get it. I understand the blind trust in Israel. It is I think it needs to be kept in check. Not everything Israel does is great, and we can't be on their side about everything, because not everything that they do is perfect and good and right. But we need to be... I'm not even sure we should be giving them money. I don't know. It gets complicated. We are, you know, very closely related in our form of government and the type of ally that they are for us. But the anti-Semitism bothers me, and Candace Owens recently converted to Catholicism with her husband, and I don't know. I just know that there's a spiritual war going on here, and Jonathan Cahn had some really good points the other day. He put out a little blurb, maybe 20 or 30 minutes long, And it talked about just basically the whole thing was all about Candace. He was basically talking to Candace through his little video podcast thing. And it was interesting how he laid it all out with regard to Israel and God's plan for Israel. He has not divorced Israel, by the way. He made a covenant with Israel. And there is not this replacement theology thing that so many people think of. We have been engrafted in. They were not rejected. We have been grafted in to the branch. Anyway, where did I start off with all this? I don't really remember. As I recall, it was something to do with the feast. Okay, so we have you know, Jesus drives the money changers out. My guess is there was something timing wise that day that probably spoke to something that I'm unaware of. I'm sure he fulfilled something that day in driving them out that I am not aware of. Maybe there's a part of the Torah that they were going to. It was part of that day's something. Who knows? I have to dig in a little bit deeper. I'm probably stepping out beyond my. I'm getting over my skis. But the. Yeah, that's kind of the gist of what I'm trying to get at here is there was more political going on behind the scenes. There was corruption there, corruption that probably Messiah knew about, that he probably somehow made it very clear to the priests and those around, I know what's going on here, and you're not going to get away with this. Because they didn't say anything about it. They never said anything about his violence there. It was a very pretty violent act. He was angry. And yet he went on with the rest of his life, and he went on with the rest of his day. He did what needed to be done. But the anger... There was a fellow by the name of Roger... I can't think of his last name. Oh, he was a pastor. A Church of the Brethren pastor, way back in the 80s. Early 80s. Very quiet individual, very super quiet guy. He knew his Bible probably better than anybody I've ever, one of those people who knew it, but you know, he was probably one of the best, top 10, I would say, top 10 people who just knew where stuff was. He read his Bible all the time. That's all he did. Fairly young guy in his 30s, late 30s, 40s, maybe. He's much older than me. I was probably 10, 15 years older than me, at least. I'm not sure where he is today, but he was a fiery preacher. He would get in the pulpit and he would start to preach, and he was very quiet. The next thing you know, he's on his toes and preaching with passion. And one of the sermons he preached, I'll never forget it. I didn't hear him preach very many sermons, but it's a sermon that sticks out in my mind. So God is looking for a few angry young men. And I talked about how we need to be angry at injustice and all the other things in the world that we need to be mad about. And it was very, very good, very clear message on that whole topic. I think he covered it probably better than anybody. I don't even dare try to repeat it without some considerable thought, because it was a very good message. Probably a good message for our time. And the reason I bring it up is this: there's this thing about being checked in your anger, and actually having a righteous anger that goes beyond yourself. It's not something that you prop up and show everyone, oh, I'm so angry at the, oh, look at me, I'm angry at abortion. Abortion. But you don't do anything about it. Then there's this faux anger, faux virtue about, oh, I'm so concerned about the illegal aliens being persecuted and kidnapped and hauled off the street. Oh, this is just, I'm just, so, or whatever it is. It's just this faux anger about women's health care, women's reproductive rights. So passionate about it. They need to have the right to kill their babies. So passionate about it. It's so unjust that they're not allowed to kill their babies in their womb. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I can't go down that road. Not because I'm not allowed to. I cannot keep myself together enough to do that. This idea that the virtue signaling is just outrageous, and this is what social media has magnified this to some degree, to a huge degree actually. People get online, get on their TikTok, get on their little Facebook shorts, whatever, their YouTube shorts, Facebook reels, whatever it is. Get on there and do the little thing where they start to scream in the camera or they start to cry and scream and get angry and all this stuff about what Trump is doing. Oh, Trump. And yet they have no clue, no basic understanding of what the problem really is. You know, and most of the time, their anger and their vitriol and their rage is based on things that aren't even true. And it's being drunk. If they were just to out living their normal life, being productive and not listening to the rhetoric, they're only saying these things not because of their own research. I see people on Facebook all the time saying, oh, I've done my own research. I do a lot of research. They watch MSNBC and CNN. That's what they do. They listen to The View. They listen to whatever it is. It's passive research. It's information that's being funneled into their gullet by someone else. This is like a little baby bird in a nest that's eating the vomit of their mother. Which is actually what they do. The mother goes out and hunts for food, and then they throw it up and throw it in their baby's mouth. They're just little baby birds eating the upchuck from their parents, from their mother. And they think that they're well informed. Oh, look at me, I've taken care of myself today. Look at me. I'm sitting here in the nest all by myself, and I've taken care of myself. I'm so self-sufficient. I didn't have to leave the nest today. I got fed. I was able to open my mouth and cry, and I got some food. Look at me. Wow. Proud of you. That's where most of the leftists are today. And I say that because most of them have a, when it comes to politics, when it comes to issues in the world that they think they're so mature about. I hear them saying things. It's like there's no discernment filter on these people. There is a lack of discernment in our churches, in the people, the followers of Christ right now. It's just this way I see it. And it saddens me because I'm a part of that, and I feel like where would we be as a church? Where would I be as an individual, as a believer, as a disciple, if I wasn't, you know, if we weren't all surrounded by this mesh of just feel-good messages that have nothing to do with real truth. And anyway. Yeah, we have this rage will blind you. If you continue on in it, and you continue living your life day by day in this rage that happens, you start getting sucked into all of the rhetoric and the phony baloney stuff that's going on. And I think in my opinion, dangers in this whole thing. This is where it's come from. Of course, now the left and the right has always been, you know, there's a divide here now. I think that it happens just, you know, it doesn't happen as much, but it happens on the right as well. And I'm not saying I'm beyond it or above it. I'm just saying I want to recognize when it happens. I want to be well aware within myself of when that happens. And it would seem that when I speak of that, I mean the influence of the talking points, when I don't actually, you know, dig into something myself, if I just look at the reality of it. Here's the thing. When we have Tim Walz, I think I'm going to use him as an example. There were plenty of others on the left that were doing this as well, but Tim Walz could have been the vice president of the United States. I think for some reason, he's still out there making campaign speeches, and I'm pretty sure he is probably going to try to make a run for the campaign. He would love to see himself have that trip into that viral moment where he becomes the nominee for 2028. I'm pretty sure he's doing that. I'm sure he wants to remain in as governor much as long as he can. He's the governor of Minnesota, a state that has plenty of issues, problems, because of Democrat policies. Of course, at the same time, after all that, he's also he's out making speeches. Well, he made this speech, and he talked about over the weekend. Now, everybody knew. I heard, and maybe it wasn't publicized very much, but I found out before the weekend started. I think it was on Thursday. Trump, I think, made a statement or made a comment or a speech of some kind doing something on Thursday. And then he and Melania and Barron, and there's some other people, was being whisked off for an extended vacation, an extended weekend vacation, like a 3 or 4 day vacation. He was going to completely disengage from everything that was going on. That was his plan, was to completely disengage. Now, I heard this before the weekend. Now, he was going, of course, he's still the president. He's still being followed by everybody that's going to be following him around. Everything's being done. But he was basically going to disconnect from the media, disconnect from everything that was going on. I wasn't going to push anything, wasn't going to be making any statements, wasn't going to make any speeches. He was just going to be spending time with family and reconnecting and with family and just disengaging with, I think, meeting with some other people that he knew, some friends and that kind of thing. Which is an interesting thing about the whole Epstein thing. I'll get to that sometime, probably not today. And everybody knew this, who was paying attention. Maybe that's the way to put it. I guess if you heard anything about what was going on over the weekend, the White House didn't make a big deal of it. Nobody said much about it, but the left started losing their brains. No one has seen him for 2 days. He must be dead. He must have had a stroke. Oh, look, he must have gone to Walter Reed. All this different stuff. They saw three helicopters leaving the White House area, which is the way he always travels with three helicopters. One of them is Marine One. The other two are the They call them the decoys, but they're not only decoys. I mean, you can usually tell which one he's in. But you never know, however, supposedly. So I don't know. But the whole idea is he's in one of the helicopters and he's leaving going somewhere. And it was headed towards Walter Reed. Well, there are departure procedures depending on how the helicopter is going to leave the White House as to which way that's. You can't hardly go any direction out over there without going past Walter Reed. It's just, you got the ocean on the one side, and then you got, it's either north, south, or west. And west is a lot of traffic, aviation traffic, airline traffic. South is a lot of airline traffic. There's only certain patterns that can fly out of there. Even though it's the president's plane, they just have to be able to maneuver around some things that are happening. So there's this idea that they were closing roads around Walter Reed. Well, there's always road closings around Walter Reed. Of course, they just looked on their Google map and saw these roads that were closed. And they're like, well, look, they're closing these roads. The roads had nothing to do with getting in and out of Walter Reed. It was just ridiculous, ridiculous. Hysteria is what it is. And they're all hoping that they're going to hear. Now, can you imagine if Donald Trump were to die today? You'd hear about it today. It's not something that they're going to, even if he had a stroke. They're not going to hide that. Now, I do believe he has had some kind of, I believe it was related a lot to the shot that was fired that he took on in Pennsylvania. I think that when he was... Something more happened to him there with regard to some nerve damage in his face and some the stress that he was put under at that time. Personally, I think that it had an effect on his health. Now, does that mean he can't lead? Absolutely not. He's still engaged. I think he's got his mental faculties. We have 100 times the president we had when Joe Biden was in office. This guy doesn't show up for 2 days. Joe Biden would hide for, he was on the beach every other week, it seemed like. And he would ignore the press for months at a time. Donald Trump steps out of the limelight for two days, and I think he's dead. And they start having these weird reactions to, somebody actually, I think Ducey actually questioned Trump yesterday. He showed up for a press conference, which is something that Biden never did. He showed up for a press conference and he asked him about, we heard that you were dead. And he said, I heard something about that. They were saying something about it. He didn't really know anything about it. He said he did hear one report that said something about he's gone for 2 days and they think he's dead, whatever. Just ridiculous stuff. It's ridiculous stuff. But this is where the anger and the rage goes. Now, and here's the thing. Tim Walz thinks it's politically expedient to go down this road of thinking that everybody else wants to see Trump dead. He's disenfranchised. Does he realize he's disenfranchising half of the voting public out there? Probably more. They've been living in this bubble for so long, and in this bubble, within this bubble, there was this money sloshing around that they thought was coming from supporters. It was coming from USAID funds. By the way, Gavin Newsom made this comment over the weekend. Oh, ICE agents are going to show up at the polls, and then he's going to disenfranchise. People aren't going to show up at the polls if ICE is there to get them. Are you suggesting that people are showing up at the polls that are not U.S. citizens? Because, and they always pull this trick. Anytime you say, well, illegals are voting in they could possibly be voting in our elections. It's illegal for people to vote in any election without being a U.S. citizen. They will never say illegals don't vote in our elections. All they will say is, well, it's against the law for them to do that. It's already against the law. Of course, you use that same term. When it comes to gun rights, it's already against the law to do that. What this person did was already against the law. All the gun control things that would have kept this person from doing it, they broke all those rules. It's because rules don't always necessarily mean something. People are going to obey the rules. The problem is we have to be able to do something to the people who do break the rules. When the rules are broken and we don't do anything, that's where the problem is. That's a systemic problem. But I'm not going to. Okay. So anyway. So Tim Walz makes this comment. I'm going to try to play this for you. This was on Sky News Australia. And this is just a little piece of what he said. He said a lot more than this. It was actually got pretty, I think it got pretty disgusting. But see what he says here.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things. And although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime. Just so you know, there will be news.
All right. So what he's saying is, there will be news. In other words, Trump will eventually die. Tim, you will too. And nobody wishes it on you, and nobody wishes it... This is the difference between the radical Democrats who think that it's cute and funny. They can talk about the death of our president, who was duly elected, won the popular vote, and the Electoral College. And they have the audacity to come out and make these kinds of comments and think it's funny and cute. I'm just saying. We know what you're saying. And oh, they were so disappointed when Trump finally came back and said, oh, he's back and he's not. Everybody was saying he had a stroke. Everybody was saying he had all these issues. We can't get his medical reports. Maybe he's dead. Why can't we get his medical records? Well, we couldn't get Joe Biden's medical records. And in fact, Joe Biden has cancer. And we weren't allowed to know that about anything about him, even when he was running. And when we find out when he lost the race, all of a sudden, he has stage 4 or 5 or whatever it is, cancer. Hello? Democrat Party is in a mess right now. And their biggest mess that they've got is they don't know who their leader is. Gavin Newsom comes out and makes the comments he made about, about this whole thing about ICE agents showing up at the polls. Yeah. Who are they going to find there? Aren't they just going to find citizens? Why would they show up at the polls? Well, it's going to put a chill on people coming to the... What people? I would think. You know, I think when the Black Panthers show up at the polls, which happened, by the way, in 2012. Black Panthers were showing up at some of the voting areas to make sure there wasn't any... They were there. They were keeping white people. You think that's going to encourage white people to show up at the polls? Black Panthers are standing there with baseball bats and guns. This happened, by the way, in 2012. It's documented as it happened. Nobody was ever investigated. Nothing ever happened. It's amazing to me that they would come out with this kind of a statement, that Gavin Newsom would say this kind of thing, and not understand that he's implicating the idea that, yeah, there are illegal immigrants, non-citizens showing up at the polls to vote. Now, in some states, this is allowed. They do allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. Gee, I wonder how they're going to vote. And I wonder why the Democrats stick up for it. And I wonder why they don't care about open borders. They need an underclass. The Democrat Party needs an underclass that they can give stuff to so that they will maintain power and maintain their voting majority. Now, one of the things that they also do, and this is something they're throwing a fit about, is the U.S. Census also included and counted, guess who? Non-citizens. And you may say, well, what's the census have to do with it? Who cares? It's just the population. Well, that's the whole thing about this gerrymandering thing. The what's happening is they're drawing lines based on representation, based on population. It has to be a certain number of people within a certain district in order for that district to have representation. What ends up happening, it's estimated that basically there are, I don't know, the numbers of representatives now that are in the House, in Congress, U.S. Congress, and even the state level, it makes a difference. But the numbers that are there are based on the numbers of people within certain districts, and guess what? If those people are not legal, or not even citizens, they still get representation for some reason. So it counted in this representation thing. So they end up with more representatives than are legal citizens that are qualified. This is a fraud, in my opinion. I think it's estimated they would lose about 8 seats in the House right now if they didn't count illegal immigrants. That's an estimate, the minimum estimate that I heard. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a geopolitical expert. I don't have a degree in anything. I do know how an airplane flies, though. But This is where the crux of the problem is. Of course, Trump announces that he's going to have another U.S. census, and he's going to make sure that it's done not counting those non-citizens. And we'll see how many people were actually here. Now we can probably find out. When we finally figure out, there's about, it's estimated about 40 to 45 million people are in this country right now who are not U.S. citizens. Now, there are people who are working on citizenship legitimately. Of course, now there are tourists, there are people on student visas, all this other stuff. That's all legitimate. People who are here on a green card, whatever that is. They're here. They're not citizens. We know of them. But there's probably tens of millions, more than 10 million, probably closer to 20 million, who are here living in the shadows. That's mind-boggling to me. So, what's the message for today, Kevin? The message for today is, we'll get to it right after this message. You can call the show. Let me know what you think about what I think. It's 812-379-8778. I'm about to give you this idea of what I think about all this. The message of the show. Here it is. About to lay it on you. I want you to brace yourself. Be ready for this. I can't remember what I was talking about. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. We have to, as a nation, come to grips with the fact that we have a mess on our hands here. that there are parties and people involved and corruption involved behind the scenes that we have not even scratched the surface, in my opinion, on. Let's put it this way. Let's be angry at the corruption. Let's be angry with the issues at hand, the lies that have been told, the deception, the finagling behind the scenes. Let's overturn these tables and get an idea of where the truth really is in this whole thing. We can argue all day about whether it's fair that the non-U.S. citizens are allowed to vote in a presidential election. Apparently some cities believe it's okay for them to vote in their local elections, which I think is outrageous. I think people, how do people... I don't think that the Democrats really have the kind of support that they think they do. I think that they've been living in this phony bubble. It's been propped up by this idea that they've got all this financial support. I don't even think the politicians realize it themselves. I think that, all this money's coming in, it must be supported. It's coming in from sources that are fake and phony. Big dollars, big money behind them. All while they're out there saying, oh, we got to go after the millionaires and billionaires. Well, I guess just billionaires now, because, you know, Bernie's now a millionaire, so he can't. That's where we're at. It just amazes me, I guess, that to some degree that people are just completely blind to this and they follow along. They're just lemmings. But I digress. I guess it's just where people are and where they've always been. I don't know that there was ever any, you know, was there ever any outrage in the temple with the money changers? I don't know. And we have that in our society today, both on the political realm as well as in the church realm. People see it as big business. And the church is big business, but it's not a business that's about being business. It's about the people. But that's another thing. Call the show, text the show, 812-379-8778. Let me know what you think about what I think. You can also go to google.com/voice and leave a message there as well. Folks, God bless. I will see you tomorrow. Take care. See ya.